Welcome back to the Love Boat Project, episode 15. Tonight, 15. Very special episode. We are talking about season one, episodes 15 and 16. That's right. It's a two-parter. And if it's a two-parter, that means we need to have two guests.
Of course.
Two captains. Let's start with the lovely lady of the crew, all the way from downstairs in my house, Michelle Potter. Hi, Michelle. How are you?
Hi. I like, I go by one name, just Michelle. Everybody else has a full name. Michelle. I am just Michelle.
No. Yeah, that's probably best.
Like Cher.
Exactly.
Try to preserve some anonymity.
Iconic.
And the last true Philadelphian himself, joining us all the way from South Philadelphia, Dan Thompson.
That's me. Thank you. Thank you for inviting me to your program.
Yep. And hi, Mike. Sorry, I'm so used to seeing you all the time. So, yeah.
We're always here. It's fine.
So we normally ask if you, the guest has been on a cruise before, but I am pretty confident that neither of you have. So what I wanted to start with was, as we do have two, different guests. Dan.
I was on a small cruise in the Bahamas when I was 18 years old.
Oh,
that's so, well,
there you go. Look at that.
Congratulations.
How about me trying how to old? Assume
how old?
How old? I was a senior in. I was 17 going on 18. I was a senior in high school. And we went on a number of short cruises around the islands in the Bahamas. Most of them were booze related.
That's what I was saying. That was my next question.
And most of them were not luxurious. Let's put it that way.
Well, did you spend the night in the boat, or is it just a cruise around the islands to drink?
It was a cruise around the islands to drink. The one was a literal booze cruise. And then the other one was a very nice cruise that took us to like a sort of isolated island where we could do whatever we wanted, which, you know, at the time was drink basically, but it was sort of like out of the prying eyes of the government and tourists. So you took a boat, a very nice boat, and then went to this little private, semi-private island, and you could get jet skis and stuff like that, or just sit there and drink. And that's what we did. And then sun went down, hopped back on, and they took us back to, the Crystal Palace where we were staying.
So how much of
not exactly
how much of your cruise experience did you see in the 2-hour episode of Love Boat that we are talking about today?
Zero.
Yeah. Yeah, I kind of figured.
But I mean, for the like, you know, I was on a cruise, right? I mean, that was the question.
Count. It's
I was
more than more I than mean, any of
does
us.
That count?
Well,
yeah.
Does that count?
I know a few of us. I know at least two of us in here. Fair enough. Let's move on.
Move on.
Sorry.
Michelle, my dear, you as the youngest of this set, what was your Love Boat knowledge and experience, let's say before your husband started watching these at the behest of the guy in the corner?
So. Nada. Like, I think when the idea of this podcast was first proposed was the first time I had heard the words love and boat uttered in the same sentence consecutively. I mean, I'm sure I'd heard, I had name recognition. I had heard of it. I couldn't have told you if it was a drama, a comedy. Spoiler alert, I don't know who any of these guest stars are.
Yeah.
I'm along for the ride.
Spoiler alert, everything you just said broke my heart in twain.
Yeah, the age difference, while it doesn't feel like that much, when you watch a show like this, it really does feel like that much. Yeah. So.
And
so Dan, I mean, go ahead. Yeah.
Well, no, please. I don't mean to cut you off.
No, I was just going to say, same question. I mean, I feel like you had a excellent knowledge of the Love Boat growing up, as we all did.
I'm pretty sure I watched this episode before. I was familiar with, I feel some of these co-stars had been on either previous or later shows. They just looked familiar. The plots, you know, kind of not recycled, but let's say familiar again. And most
intricate
of it, yeah,
like a maze.
And most of the guest stars, I was oddly familiar with. There's a Philadelphia connection too, which we can get to later, since I'm the last true Philadelphian. I was opposite from your lovely wife there, I was just like, oh yeah, I know these people. This is great. So yeah.
It's why we work together.
Right. But also, as we've talked about this before, is that your husband and I were raised by television. So this is a little different. I used to watch these when I had nothing to do. I'd watch The Love Boat and things like that. So when I was a kid, a latchkey kid, and I had no friends.
Weren't we all? I feel like latchkey kid was just kind of just the way it was. It wasn't a thing. Yeah. It was normal.
It was great because it was dangerous fun. It was always a lot of danger. So,
like, I remember coming home being like H.R. Puff and stuff, and it would lead to all these really familiar shows that, kind of like this. I remember, 45 years old. It's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, I watched all these shows for hours after school. I mean, hours, just until I guess my parents came home, and then we watched shows that are now on reruns. Or no, that's 30 some odd years ago. Oh, God, that was a long time ago. But yeah, no, sorry. Very familiar with them. Love them. Love The Love Boat. Love the song. Felt very nostalgic sitting listening to the song. I loved it. Loved
and this
it.
this is a big deal episode. Not only is it the first two-parter, but it is the first appearance of the porthole introductions. They are not throughout the whole run of the season that we've seen so far, and weirdly, they don't appear the rest of the season. The first time they show up on a regular episode is the first episode of season two. So this was, we've been waiting for these. And so, because there's just so many people that you either know by name and not by face or vice versa. So the portholes really help. And in this episode, I would say pretty boring porthole turns. People were still feeling it out. The only person who seemed to do anything was Larry Storch. He kind of went for a bit.
He was going for an Emmy. Like, he was given 100%. I have a couple questions that we'll get to later, but
I
thought he was given 100% effort in this episode. I appreciated that. Like,
he was great.
I have a number of SRQs, Storch related queries.
Excellent. Well, we'll carve out some time for Larry Storch. Michelle, quick question. Do you have any clue who Larry Storch is, even in this episode?
I just, I'm nothing if not prepared. I just looked at the cheat sheet that I put together before the show, and he was Elwood Riggs, who I think I put as the other guy in the gang.
Ox?
Not the guy who Ox isn't Ox.
The one that was like a little
John
like,
Chuck?
Ox was a little off.
Yeah. And then he wasn't the leader, so I kind of had him as like the other guy. I don't know.
You nailed it. You got there.
Storch.
The leader was noted character actor Harold
Gould. episode, which, like I said, two-parter, which means we get four storylines. We usually get three. This time we get four. Whoa. So we had Eyes of Love, Masquerade, Hollywood Royalty, and The Caper. And Michael, did you see who wrote The Caper?
I did see who wrote The Caper. It's one of our favorites, isn't it?
Our guys. Yeah.
Yes,
Art Barr. Art Barr and Ben Jolson.
I'm sorry, Art Barr, right?
Yeah, not Art Barr. Not the wrestler.
I don't know if you've heard of our episodes, but this is a particular writer that Mike and I are a fan of.
Yeah. I felt like we were in good hands with The Caper.
Yeah.
We will get into The Caper itself and decide if it was a good caper.
Sorry, who are the writers? Because I will write that down.
Ben Jolson and Art Bear.
Oh, not familiar with either. And I can't find
Summary of this baby, a gang of thieves board the ship with the intention of stealing a ginormous diamond necklace owned by a fellow passenger and famous movie star. A blind woman reconnects with a former blind friend. The two fall rapidly in love. A lawyer's wife learns that her new cruise friend is actually her husband's mistress. So, a lot of moving parts this one. This thing originally aired as a two-parter on January 21st, 1978. As we said, it's the first two-hour episode. And it's also first time we've had a returning guest star.
That's right.
Michelle Lee.
A quick turnaround.
Like less than 10 episodes.
So. That's weird.
Yeah.
Was it Desi Arnaz Jr.?
No, this was Desi. This was Desi's first one. So before we get into the credits, Mike, did you happen to look what was on against our Fair Love Boat this week?
I did not. I did not.
So a couple things, because it is 2 hours, so yes, we have a little extra ground to cover. So NBC, in their typical movie of the week, Standing Tall, starring Robert Forster and Chuck Connors.
Ooh, I like Chuck Connors.
Chuck Connors. ABC.
That's a man right
the
there.
Rifleman.
Yeah.
ABC, that's a real man.
Michelle, do you know about Chuck Connors?
You know I'm Chuck like Connors. Did you grow up with any Chuck Connors?
I'm sitting back for this part. You guys take it from here.
Connors had a window in his career. You know,
He's going to end up on this. He'll end up on this boat.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Kojak was on at 10 on CBS, so he seems to have taken over the Carol Burnett spot. Weird transition. But before that, we got a double shot of the Jeffersons and the Tony Randall Show.
Let me ask you. So, did this start at? Was it 8 to 10, or was it 9 to 11?
9 to 11. That's too sultry for 8 to 10.
Ooh. Yeah, that's what I was wondering.
It's risque. Jesus. Yeah.
I mean, if you want eyes on the, you know, just wondering. Okay.
All right.
Tony Randall had a kid at 76.
Good for him.
Yeah, I remember he was on the Howard Stern show with his bride.
Yeah.
All right. The cast list today, as Michelle pointed out, is extremely long. This is probably our longest cast list, which does make sense because it's our longest episode. But let's work backwards. Michelle, was there anybody that you actually knew at all in the cast?
So, of course, I knew Desi Arnaz Jr., or thought I did. I knew the name. I know Little Ricky. I'm not that far removed. However, did this identify the character?
Yeah. I'm sure Michelle thought that Desi Arnaz was Fernando Lamas.
There was a quite a accent. I mean, he was raised in L.A.
Like, also, well, he's Argentinian, you know.
The first thing he says, he sounds like Ricky Ricardo.
He sounds exactly like Ricky Ricardo. Like, it sounded like purposeful. I thought it was a put on. I really did.
That guy talks like we talk. There's no reason for him to sound. He's not from Cuba. He's from California, not Los Angeles. Well, he is from California. Know. Get out of here. Your mom has red hair. Stop it. You don't talk like that.
What are you,
Ted Hanks? All of a sudden,
so that was the journey I went on, but that wasn't him. That wasn't Desi Arnett. Like, it blew my mind when I found out that he was Steve.
Yeah. Mike, are you gonna go through all, because I have so many facts.
We can go wherever you want. Why don't you guys just pick out some cast members you want to talk about and let's talk about
Desi. Since we're on Desi, do you have a Desi fact?
I have two. He, in fact, was not the kid on the Lucy Arnaz show. That was an actor.
Correct. That's correct.
And second of all, he was in a band with Dean Martin's son, and Dean Martin's son died in the Air National Guard.
Wow.
Anyway. I knew the first part. I knew the part about the band and Dean Martin.
It was called
Desi, Dean, and like Joe. And Joe was just some dude from the neighborhood. I can't remember the third guy, but it was
Joe's like that guy on Star Trek that goes with the captain on the new planet. He's not coming back.
Whoever the third guy was did get some fame as the touring keyboard member for the Beach Boys. That's all I remember about him. I looked this
John
up.
He was the drummer.
John Stamos was just the hunk of the Beach Boys. Are you insane?
He's a second percussionist.
He was playing sexy congos. That's all. Fun fact.
Feel
the rhythm of the steel drum band, Mike.
Desi Arnaz Jr., fun fact, he appeared on the cover of the very first issue of TV Tiger Guide. Beat.
With I was going to say Tiger Beat.
As a baby.
Headline, Lucy's $50 million baby.
Wow.
$50 million baby?
I guess because she was making so much cash because she had this Desi
They were making
production.
$50 million in the 50s? That's insane.
Well, here's the other weird thing. So that's Desi Arnaz Jr., right?
Mm-hmm.
They had a daughter, and they named the daughter Lucy, but changed the spelling. So Lucy and Desi have kids named Lucy and Desi. There's something weird about that. Like, to me, the second one, I was like, that's a little odd.
Yeah.
Like, you can go all one letter. We've seen that, like the Ducketts. I used to live across the street from the Ducketts, and there was Rhonda Duckett and Ricky Duckett.
Wow, shout out.
These people are not real.
Chucky Duckett. It was crazy.
Rhonda Duckett.
Rhonda Duckett.
Exist.
Donna Duckett.
No.
Don Duckett. David Duckett.
Figure it out.
Let's move this along. Adrian Barbeau, who plays Kathy, who is the mistress. Any Adrian Barbeau notes from anybody?
No.
No. You know what's funny? I said this to Michelle.
It was a show like, on Adult name... Swim. Oh.
Go ahead.
Sorry, there was a show on Adult Swim. Mike Taylor probably calls this C-Lab. Do you remember that show, Mike?
Mm-hmm.
The only reason I'm bringing this up because they had one episode that featured an Adrian Barbeau bot. So there you go. I thought that was very funny.
So fun fact. Harold Gould, as Dan mentioned, great character actor in one of my all-time favorite movies that Michelle has still not seen, The Sting.
What's that?
Yeah,
The Sting. He is absolutely great in that, which gave me hope for The Caper. But it just shows you're only as good as the talent you surround yourself with.
True.
Fernando Lamos, we kind of already talked about. He is Renegade's father. He has an amazing...
And Vince what? Black. Sorry. Reno Rance and Vince Black.
Oh, sorry.
I don't think I didn't know you were into
the whole syndicated catalog.
He's also the inspiration for The Greatest Man in the World or whatever, right? Oh, were you going to say that? I apologize.
No, I was going to go the other way that I wasn't sure about. Is he the inspiration for the Billy Crystal Fernando character?
Same. Oh,
that's good. That's a so good
I thought,
one.
Okay. That's why
Fernando and the most interesting man in the world and personal friend of Obama. So there you go.
Still alive, right?
A lot today already.
I think he's dead.
Fernando Lamos died in 1982.
Yeah, how's he friend with Obama?
No. The most interesting man in the world is personal friend of Obama.
Oh, sorry. I apologize. Weird.
Yeah, no, he died in January 21st, 1978, like 2 years after this episode.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, he was 67 years old.
You think he was deep sea diving for that brooch?
He was that guy lived. You know what I mean? He didn't leave anything on the field. Like, come on. Look at his
skin. As we alluded, Michelle Lee is the first of many, I'm sure, to return. She was in episode 5 playing a meek and mild housewife who was convinced that her husband was going to kill her.
That's right.
So I
aboard,
think this
aboard the ship.
Wait, wasn't that our favorite episode?
Yes, it is.
That's our favorite episode.
Michelle Lee's great. Michelle,
you have not seen the other episode that's to come after this. That will be your favorite.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
I know there's only 15 episodes in the series so far. I don't know. We'll see what happens.
The question I had about the returning guest stars was: would they make them different enough so you didn't feel like, oh, this is just? They did.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
It's just two completely different characters. Never even felt like I was watching the same thing. Great job.
Okay.
We skipped Juliet Mills.
Yeah, there's a few here.
Oh, right.
Who is Barbara, who is the wife of Alan Danver, who is Dan Rowan. Dan Rowan, obviously, from Rona Martin's Laugh-In, absolutely one of my favorite people. Just his he wasn't even acting in this thing. This was just him doing Dan Rowan.
It was his life. It was his life.
It was great. They even let him have the little pipe that he smokes. Like, it was just fantastic.
Yeah.
Did you notice his?
All right, I was not familiar with Dan Rowan. Like, I'm really? Peripherally aware of Rowan and Martin's Laugh-In.
Right.
Wow. Right. So I looked this guy up because I didn't know who he was. And
great guy.
There were some things about that. This guy, aside from the Ronin, that's not the most amazing thing about the guy. He was orphaned at age 11. He graduated high school. He hitchhiked to Los Angeles and found a job in the mailroom at Paramount Pictures. A year later, he became Paramount's youngest staff writer. But that's not all. During World War II, he served as a fighter pilot. His military decorations included the Distinguished Flying Cross with Oak Leaf Cluster, the Air Medal, and the Purple Heart. Like, he shot down enemy aircraft over the Pacific. Like,
I didn't know any of that.
I just liked him because
he had a cool, dry wit.
I didn't like his mustache. I got to be honest with you. That was a little weird. But I just was keep reading. I'm like, you got to be. No, and then just another thing and another
thing. I'm going to have to go back and rewatch this episode with all of this in mind because of the character that he was playing, I really had little to no use for this man. So now I just feel like it's a whole new, because I don't know this character that he's playing or not or whatever. So I'm just kind of underwhelmed by it. But apparently I should just be overwhelmed by feelings
of a war hero, Michelle. He's allowed to have multiple women.
You should be, every time he gets on screen, you need to salute.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Duly noted.
His beleaguered wife, the designer, Barbara, is played by Juliet Mills, who, as we're watching the episode, I'm like, I don't know who she is. You know what? She sounds like Haley Mills from The Parent Trap.
Turns out
she's the sister of Haley Mills.
No so, kidding.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, a slight correction. She's not a designer. She's a fabric designer. There you go.
Oh.
That's how they met.
The devil is in the details, sir.
Yeah.
Dan Rowan.
And in the ascot.
Dan Rowan has a type. And it is very specific.
Yeah. Somebody a designy, fabric-y.
He likes women that work in fabric. Because
he doesn't like rough hands. That's why.
Did you see his wardrobe during this episode? I mean, I was looking. I was trying to find.
He wore
a bucket hat. Was pretty great.
And a bucket hat.
He had that sort of
bucket hat was great.
Short-sleeved one piece with the belt and the...
Listen, no, don't.
I was trying to find that.
No, that's amazing. If you could get like a short set jumper in terry cloth with a faux belt, shut up.
Where does a man get that in 2023?
1978. That's where you get it. You go to go shop at 1978. We should make them have a store called 1978 and just sell jumpsuits, terry cloth jumpsuits.
The Dan Rowan line.
Very specific Dan Rowan jumpsuit line. Good call.
Did you catch the fabric related joke where she says, "Oh, he thinks Chenille is married to the captain." It's a captain and Chenille joke.
Yeah.
Which is sad because they're not married anymore and Chenille is losing his mind. No, the captain is losing his
mind. Dennis Dragon?
It just falls flat in 2023. But anyway, I thought it was a great joke. They had and fabric related. Fabric related humor.
The rest of Harold Gould's motley crew, Larry Shuck as Ox, John Shuck as Ox, Larry Storch as the aforementioned Elwood Riggs, and Karen Valentine as Taffy Martino. Apparently, Valentine, an accomplished actress who won an Emmy.
Tell me more. I didn't know anything about her at all. Was she in TV shows or like what?
I've never seen this show. Don't know a lot about it. She was in Room 222.
Yeah.
Which was like an early 70s show. And she won an Emmy for it. So.
Yeah. It's a very
socially she's playing against the type here.
Socially conscious show.
Another one
that's
been on like every show. Like guest. She's a big guest star.
You could do a whole. Room 222 is great. I mean, it's a great show. It's very.
And finally.
Mike. Wait a minute. Wait 1 minute. John Shuck.
Okay.
One of the worst TV shows I've ever seen in my life. It was the 1989 to 90, I believe, or maybe later, reboot of The Munsters. He was Herman Munster. It aired for 1 year.
Me
and the producer were the only people that watched it. It was terrible. And
I think it was like the
screen. It took me a minute. I'm like, why do I know that face? Oh, I'm accustomed to it, covered in green paint. Trying to be Herman Munster, and it was awful.
I think it was on like the WB or the CW, like one of those channels.
They performed it in my living room because I was the only person
so
watching.
So bad. Like, I love the Munsters, but it's garbage.
Michelle, I think you had some thoughts on her in general, but Stephanie Zimbalist, who plays the blind Jenny Lang, as I said to Michelle, everyone's mom in the 80s watched Remington Steele.
Of course.
And she was the lead actress. But Michelle, what are your thoughts about old Stephanie Zimbalist, Jenny Lane?
You know, I'm sure we'll get some more details later, but I really enjoyed her. Like any of these people, I don't know anything about her. Beautiful head of hair. My God, just a thick mane, gorgeous hair. I felt her character was very grounded. And she had the most dramatic dialogue of anybody that I've seen in a show. She spoke like a prophet at all times.
She had
I enjoyed that.
Yeah.
She could have been in like a 30s movie.
I want to save what my favorite line of hers to later in the episode. If you guys,
I'm going to bet we all have it written down.
I've tried to incorporate it into two conversations and have failed, but I love it. It's one of my favorite.
Hope it's the same one. So any other notes before we go?
Yes.
Yeah, go.
Yes.
Good.
July of 2022. Larry Storch died at age 99 after an amazing career, by the way.
99.
The guy, if you look up his Wikipedia, he did. I thought he did F Troop and then things in the 70s. The guy continued doing voice work. He had a great career, and he died at age 99. So
he was really crazy.
Way to not make 100, Larry. Jeez, dude.
Yeah.
Finish the job, bro.
So,
99. Come on.
Like so many Stephanie failed heights. Zimbowitz,
not only great in this episode, I agree with you, Michelle. She was also great in Remington Steele, a show I used to watch with my parents. And I thought she was great in that too. There is a Philly connection because I know Ephraim Zimbalist was one of the first directors of the Curtis Institute of Music and was there for about 40 years. And he did a ton of Hollywood music, musical accompaniments and things like that. He did a ton of scores for Hollywood. So he was one of the Curtis Institute, which was across the street from the restaurant we all recently were at.
Yep.
I think it opened up in like 1924. He was one of the first directors and he stayed there for 40 years. So little Philly,
I did not know that.
I know you guys don't live here anymore because you're soulless, but you know, pride. So we can continue.
Why you're the last true Philadelphian. All right, let's go on the boat. So we open with the paparazzi, who are just chasing down Roz and Bill like something crazy to get onto the boat. Mike, we've seen celebs get on the boat before, in more of a hush hush kind of way.
And this Roxy is Blue.
Well, Roxy Blue was being chased by her management.
I mean, these guys still are being chased. Limo, and it was a very different. Yeah, but I don't think they were trying to avoid it.
No. Oh, what, the $1.2 million diamond thing that she's wearing? Right.
Well, the note I wrote is giant fake diamond, because it just made no sense.
And the shimmer sound. It zoomed in and it got its own shimmery sound. Yeah. Like you just knew it was going to be. Okay.
It doesn't. Why?
Why got a portal shot. Giant fake. Also starring the giant diamond brooch.
As soon as I saw her, I was like, I think I solved the caper. Let me just.
Oh, really?
I've solved the caper. Yeah.
Did you have it right away? I didn't.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. Like, they didn't even try to play it off. Like, it could have been a 16th of the size, and it still would have been unbelievable. That was ridiculous.
I thought they telegraphed it a bit because there was literally no security.
Yeah, metal. There's no security on the ship. Right.
No security whatsoever.
Start on that not safe. One and apparently, like, you can just bring, you know, drills in and bags and all sorts of things, and no one's and chemicals to make disguise. Like, oh,
this was a horrible episode for the security of the boat. Terrible.
That answered any question you ever had on if there's any.
Like we've complained for weeks about how they could just have filmed a big tall guy, maybe Ox, just in a uniform, cut it into every episode where he just stands there menacing, and that's why people don't do stuff on the boat.
Yeah, you walk by him as you get on
the boat. Meanwhile, these guys are bringing drill bits. Yep. guy had a gun a couple weeks ago.
They only brought one drill because the other guy. Ox left his drills back in L.A.
Yeah.
It was easier to get drills. Like, I don't know. They get monkeys on this boat. They get all sorts of stuff on this boat. So this is not.
You know, there has to be drug running. There has to be drug running on this boat.
Like, I thought
you can do anything you want.
When he was going to Puerto Rico.
Yeah, we go back and forth to Mexico for tourism. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So
every 10 days. What?
So the gang shows up after this.
Where's the episode?
The The gang shows up after this, yeah. The thieves, whatever we're going to call them, the caper crew, whatever we're calling the four people.
I call them henchmen.
The caper crew works.
There you go. So the caper, well, Mike, you can't be all henchmen. You need a leader. Somebody
Once
has
I
to be
say men. Oh, I see what you're saying.
No, leader. I'm saying somebody has to be, you can't just have all henchmen. That would be weird.
They would just be running around bumping into each other.
Yeah. Running around in circles, you know, tripping over leotards.
So they seem to have, like, be in a limo when they arrive. So are they?
Yeah, what are posing, they need to steal something for?
Is that, are they posing as the trappings of rich people, or are they like good crooks who have some money and then they're going for the big score?
Well, it's revealed at the end that Ox has kinds of money,
but they didn't know that
Ox has the money.
I think they were trying to sell themselves.
I think they're trying to, because also, you know, who's the con man here? Is it the guy dressed like a con man in the bright white suit with the red tie? Like he got out of that car. I'm like, okay, that's the leader, and he's the head con man. Immediately.
You're the leader. You're the hot chick. You're the muscle.
Yeah. and you're Larry Storch. You're F Troop. I don't even know what you're doing.
I just like the way he groomed. He was very groomed the whole time,
Larry
very flat.
Character was just thrown in there. Like he was not. They could have had a three. Person
how did they? How are they going to drill the hole?
He was the communication.
He was key.
Guy.
He was the dude that drilled the hole.
He was brought competent.
His bag. Yeah, he was competent.
Of the four, he was probably the most competent. Yeah.
But he doesn't like to work when he's sweaty. That's for sure. Shut it down. I'm sweaty.
He listened into those people having sex and he made quips about it. Quips.
Yeah, a lot, often. Like he was spending way too much time with that earphone on.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why this show came on at 9 o'clock at night. Because of sexual quips. Quippery.
Sure.
We'll get into the caper, the four capers, but it is a classic crew, right? Like that's what you need. You need a dame, you need a muscle, you need a brain. It's really A-team rules, except they didn't have the dame, they had face.
Well, face with like Taffy Martino, aka Lady Face. Yeah,
she is Lady Face. Yeah,
Lady Face.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
she looked like Jennifer from WKRP.
She did look a little bit like Jennifer.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who it's has terrible. Been on here already?
Yeah, just the worst hair ever.
I love
Gopher.
That
Gopher is assisting Jenny Lang into the ballroom or the entranceway. I, as someone with terrible vision, appreciated the fact that she said that she only needed to be shown everything once and she'd be fine. But I thought that was nice that Gopher, helped her in. Mike, does this qualify as someone who maybe shouldn't have come on the boat by herself?
100%.
100%.
5,000%. But here's the thing is it's not, I'm just saying expectation wise.
Yeah,
it's a new place. It's a new space. You're not going to know what everything kind of is going
to
feel the same. It's going to. It's just why would you? And then and you know, she was like, kind of like, "Well, Gopher, I have it, and I want to be like, that's sweet, and I totally get it." But she doesn't have it. Like, what are they going to say? Oh, you're up on the Acapulco deck. You know what I mean? Like, how's she going to find her? How's she going to find her room?
So there was like two occasions when she was walking by herself, and I'm like, okay, that's fine. But the second occasion, she was outside on the deck. Like, you only have to explain something once to me, and I'll use echolation to figure out where I'm at, like a bat. I get that. That's fine. But she's on a deck on the high seas.
She was skeet shooting. She was skeet shooting.
And she was distraught. Like, you know what I mean? Her echolation is not going to work. She's going to be all crazy, and she's walking the deck by herself. Like, Jesus, that's not
good. Well, if you go on a
security on this boat, no safety whatsoever. I love it.
If you go on a cruise.
God, sorry.
Right? I would think that the goal would be to relax. I don't think it would be a relaxing situation to be in a new environment and not be able to see and not have anybody with you, maybe, or just as a friend with you. Like,
but in fairness to her, and I actually really liked this about her character, because every other character on the boat kept trying to treat her like this charity case to be pitied. And she was kind of like, I'm good, guys. Show me around. I'm having a nice time. I'm enjoying the sea air and the motion of the ocean or whatever. But like, she didn't seem to be troubled by it.
Yeah. I mean, her door's unlocked too. You know what I mean?
Everybody's door's unlocked.
And she sees more than us.
She sees more than any of us.
Apparently, she's like Daredevil. Yeah. Oh, I smell.
I do wonder. Whoa. Yeah, my hearing's not that great. I do wonder what her trip would have been if old Steve wasn't at the desk when she showed up.
That's very fair.
She would have got. It's kind of like that pregnant woman in the closet.
One of those creeps was going after her. It's true.
What is Steve?
Oh, this is my gigantic ship's condo, and it was just like a supply closet because
What if Steve had like pretended to not hear her and just like? I'm going to be honest. And I don't mean this in a bad way at all. I mean, it's a similar situation. Worked at a hospital. I was a blind lady, worked in the x-ray department. I don't know how she did transcriptions, right? In a special computer. And every day she would eat in the break room. And every day, if you were in there, she would ask you to get her stuff out of the machine. And I got tired of getting her stuff out of the machine. Not because she's blind. I just got tired of getting stuff for her out of the machine.
Not because she's blind, because you're an awful human.
No, right. I did for a while.
You don't like helping anybody.
But then I remember one day she was like, "Is anyone there?" And I was like,
"Oh my god!"
Wait, you did the Jesus room? Christ. Did you slam the door? You
just volunteered. No, there was no door. I snuck out.
Yeah,
I tippy toed out
Michelle,
of the room.
To your point, nobody asked them for this information. No. He's just giving it to
us. I'm just saying that's what Steve could have done. That's what I'm bringing it back. Steve could have.
Steve obviously was very much into her. And the thing is, too,
when he couldn't see that,
for Steve's perspective, it's like you read a book, right? And then they make it a movie, and you have in your head what the character looks like. And then he got to see, and it was better.
Aww.
Good for them. It's romance.
No. They couldn't
do it. Hey, Michelle, not every marriage is based on 20/20 vision. A lot of those end in divorce. You know what I'm saying, hon? Just remember that.
I know what you're saying.
Yeah. Wow. Did anybody think at any point that Steve said something like, "I think you'd prefer it if I was blind again, or I went blind again"? Did you think he was going to pull an Oedipus and take like like knitting hooks and just put them right into his eyeballs in the bedroom? Because like for a second, I was like, "This is going to get gory as hell." He's
if he did that, though, I mean, Dan, even if he did that, just like he said, he could just go back to the doctor and have operations and he can just get his vision back.
Yeah.
I had operations. What? You were blind.
Yeah, I had operations.
What kind of operations in 1978? Because they don't have them now. So
they don't have them now. Right. So,
So you can burp all you want. We'll give you your sight back, Steve.
I was disappointed because Steve, I think they were trying to trick you by Steve wearing sunglasses initially, right?
Of course.
Because that was classic. This is a blind person. You're wearing sunglasses. But then they were pretty light sunglasses, and he ditched them right away. I'm surprised they didn't drag that out a little bit longer.
Or have him with a stick in his hand, but just like a regular stick. You know, not like a tap stick. No, what is that? Oh,
he's picking up
home.
Like he's picking up boat trash.
Yeah, my Chesapeake Bay Retriever gave this to me. bait and switch.
Anyway, those two knew each other from the blind school. Yeah, right.
It's because
those two knew each other from the blind school. Those two know each other from the blind school. They're going to have dinner together, which was nice. Steubing meets the thieves. Doc and Gopher are on Taffy. Like you dropped her on a rug.
Okay. Oh. I got something to say here. I didn't go back and rewatch the episode, so let me know if this was made more clear. But how did they know, Gopher and Doc? How are they so sure that she was single? She was there with three guys.
No clue.
Could have been there with any of them.
They don't care.
Right in.
But it's not very Gopher like.
They were kissing her hand and stuff.
Wasn't very Gopher-like. It was way out of character for him to do that.
Like
imagine you
take
your wife on a cruise and some guy just starts kissing her hand.
Yeah. Doc,
weird.
Here's the thing, though.
That's why we don't go to Myrtle Beach anymore.
We saw this last week. I think that Gopher might have broke the seal. Because remember last week,
with the
he hooked up with that dummy.
That he could only
with the bad nose. And so now I think maybe he's turning into Little Doc. And so I agree, Michelle. That was awful.
Maybe he freaks out. He only saw 36% of her face. Well, you know, and now it's 100%.
And Julie told Gopher that Doc doesn't have a patent on charm.
But he does.
He does, Julie. Shut
but
up.
He does.
What are you talking about, Julie?
Also on chloroform.
I would like to add something about Julia or Julie.
Julie.
I had a huge crush on her when I was a kid, and when I watched this episode, it rekindled it. So I just was like, wow, I used to just stare at her like a little pervert, you know what I mean? And now
we had
40 odd years later, I'm staring at her as a grown pervert. So
Julie has rebounded a little bit. There were about 3 or 4 weeks where Julie was going off the rails a little bit, and we were disappointed because the first half of this project so far has been very pro Julie. We are all falling in love with Julie. Mm-hmm. And then she had a rough stretch, but she's back on the beam, I would say. So
the captain's daughter part of the show yet?
Not yet. In fact, Dan, there was an episode
of Julie's Thunder, which I never liked, by the way.
Well, here's the thing. There was an episode a couple weeks ago where Steubing mentioned the only family he has was his father.
That's right.
So we don't know how they're gonna drop the daughter
Secret. Maybe he left Bob
clearly
Crane.
Had a romance.
Maybe she thinks he was shipwrecked. Romance. He was shipwrecked in Cape Hatteras.
TBD, no spoilers. All right, let's get into the three-way here with the masquerade. With Barbara and her lawyer husband, Alan, arrive. What was it? Yeah. Fabric designer? Was her official title?
Fabric designer. Yeah.
Yeah. So they arrive. Barbara is like ecstatic because this was a surprise. She just found the tickets, whatever. Luckily, Dan Rowan sees a cab coming from like a mile away and figures out that his mistress is in there.
Peripheral. Like that's a
gets her to Barbara toot sweet so he can handle her.
Those are fighter pilot eyes.
He's got Hordar. He's got Hordar, Mike. He can sense it.
That guy knows what's up. Point. He's everywhere. So, and
Michelle.
Nowhere. Amazing.
Michelle, as the lady on the show today. If you are the aggrieved mistress here and you show up, assuming you're going to go on a cruise with your lover, and turns out he's like, you can't come on. My wife caught us. Would you buy a ticket? Would you blow up his spot? Would you make him buy the ticket? What would be your move there?
Oh, I don't know. I can't relate to these people at all, to be honest.
I hope not.
But, you know, there was something that I really respected, though, about you know what? You think this is how this is going to go? I'm going to insert myself in this and I'm just going to make your week miserable. However that unfolds, whether she actually was trying, I actually have less respect for it if she was really vying to get this guy and win this guy, because I was not as under the influence of his charms as you three gentlemen seem to be. But just a revenge plot of I'm going to make you squirm. I respect it.
I respect the revenge plot, but there was a certain level of horrible cruelty that those two did to the wife. Like they were like, oh, I was here. I was supposed to be with, because the wife says, why are you alone? And she's like, oh, I was supposed to be with my man, but his wife found the tickets. And then the wife realizes that a few scenes later. And I was like, that's just unimaginably cruel to this poor
woman.
She
never lied, though.
They were cuckolding her in front of her face. Terrible.
Kathy never lied.
That's Haley Mills' sister.
Yet she stayed.
Ew. Ew.
So dumb.
And they stayed. Ew. I have a great taste. You have great taste in women. I have a great taste in wives.
We'll get to it at the end, but I will say this show has a weird ass way of dealing with adultery. And usually the way is not dealing with adultery.
Yeah.
So it is uncomfortable. It's probably the most tone deaf thing consistently on
it's
the show
true.
So far.
That's true.
It really is.
Yeah. Was there a laugh track on this episode?
Yes.
There is, but they don't hit it too much.
It's not consistent. It's sort of weird the way it's low in the mix too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't remember a laugh track on Love Boat.
It's hit or miss. It's not consistent in the show. It's not consistent in like episode to episode. It's not consistent on what is actually funny and what's not.
Like, different writers, different directors. I mean, there's, you know, but I wonder, I wonder if one director in one episode wants a laugh track and the other two don't. I wonder how that would work. You can't have one storyline with a laugh track. And, or maybe they do. I don't know. Interesting.
So Barbara and Alan are out on the lounges when Kathy shows up. And this is when it kind of like is basically her decision how she's going to handle it. And it turns out that I guess this is true, right? That Barbara or that Alan was Kathy's divorce attorney. Is that how they met? Or do you think that was a lie? Yeah,
I think that was bullshit. I think it was just a way to establish.
I think that's how they met. No, I honestly think that's how the whole affair started. She was getting divorced. He was the attorney.
When did they establish he was a lawyer?
The first thing he says is, I guess I'm too busy to remember to tell you about the trip. You know how lawyers are.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I think that's legit.
I just generally don't
believe people. So, yeah, no, I didn't believe it. I thought it was just I thought this
whole thing was to find out more about the Love Boat, but I'm finding out more about Mike Taylor.
Yeah, this is really just a 250.
The Love Boat was inside of him all along. I just don't trust people.
Oh, maybe the reason he doesn't trust people is because he quietly walks out of a room when a blind person is asking for assistance.
So what are the ethics
on mining outside out of a kitchen? Oh my God. Go ahead.
Sorry, what are Michael. The ethics on dating your client who you just represented in a divorce trial?
Didn't we just see this in another episode?
Well, we saw it when you were the marriage counselor.
Right. Oh yeah. Similar. That's right. Yeah.
So no problems,
right? Isn't that the same ethical dilemma? I think it's more.
I'm simply the moderator posing a question.
I'm saying if for an attorney, that's just money.
I mean,
as
somebody who works in the legal industry, not as an attorney, but as a person who has a job, I imagine they frown on you dating your client. You know, I imagine they extremely frown on it. There's probably many, I don't mean to toot my own horn, conflicts with dating your own client.
Yeah, but what would they do? What if because it was after the judgment was over? That's kind of different, right?
But is he still technically her attorney? Even though the divorce is over, the proceedings are done, is he still her attorney?
I will say none of it's great. I didn't watch the episode with the marriage counselor. That seems worse. That seems like more of a gray area where there's a path to resolution that you're capitalizing on versus, to your point, Taylor, I think there's not great, but at least in the world where like a divorce is happening, it's final. You are no longer the lawyer of record. Go chase your bliss, I guess.
Exactly.
But. Do you think it's a gray area? We look at it in 2023 as a gray area because these things actually did happen in the 70s where rules later had to be enacted to counteract all that tomfoolery. You know what I mean? We're like,
it's like Air Bud. They didn't have to put a rule in about not having a dog play basketball until a dog started playing basketball. Like
it's the worst rule ever. Worst rule ever.
Everybody's fucking their guidance counselors and lawyers and marriage counselors and shit.
He was a golden receiver.
Steve and Jenny are on the deck. And this is where Steve is going to tell Jenny about the surgery. I think it's mostly because Jenny was taking like an hour to describe a sunset, and Steve had to be like,
I get it. It's orange. I can see it.
Yeah. He's like, the goddamn moon's out by the time you're finished.
Maybe if you didn't stare at the damn sun when you were 11 years old, you'd still have your eyesight. I don't need I'm not staring at it, dummy.
Also, we're in the kitchen and you're describing the oven.
No, because you know what he should have done? Let me describe the sunset. Just hit the buffet.
There's no way you were as sneaky as you think you were. There's just no chance that she didn't hear you.
I put on like dancing shoes.
Like tap shoes?
I meant ninja shoes, but yeah. Yeah.
Jenny had the reaction I would assume she would. It'd be weird if you were like, you had eye surgery. What?
Or she slapped him. Throws him over the boat. Throws him out. Just kills him.
Or maybe she Oedipus's eyes.
Yeah. Like. Right in his. Yeah.
Well, it's kind of interesting, though, because initially she's approaching it like she's the power player because she at one time had eyesight. So she's right. Like, right. I'm a seasoned, you know, I'm a veteran on this. Let me tell you what a sunset looks like, sir. Just for him to be like, I see it.
He's like, yeah, that's cute.
Yeah.
That's cute. If this was
India. How about
India,
shut up for 10 seconds? I have eyeballs.
If this was India and we lived in a caste system, I'd be above you because these work. These work. I see orange.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you know that FDA did not clear that eye surgery he got.
Oh, whatever. Like,
that's borrowed time, those eyeballs.
What happened?
That's why he was going back to Mexico. The woman he was engaged to was his Mexican eye doctor.
He has pig eyes. That's what it is. They put animal eyes in his head.
Yeah.
He's living on borrowed time. He's got so much infection going on inside his body. He didn't have a fiance. He went there to get treatment. He's just infected from head to toe.
I mean, that fiance, we'll get that. He's got, the short shrift there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where's her story? Like,
he didn't even get a name.
Didn't happen.
She's waiting for a man to come in, get off the boat. They're engaged. And he gets off the boat and's like, by the way, no. I'm in love with Stephanie Zimbalist. Screw you. I'm getting back on the boat, too.
He got off the boat. He unloaded himself because he was like a human suitcase for some cartel. And then left it there and got back on the boat. No, you think he couldn't tell her? She can't handle. I've got you know a whole bunch of stuff inside my body that I'm smuggling, and I have a certain time I have to be there. You can't say that to her.
It's a drug. Desi Arnaz is a drug mule.
No, because she's gonna be like, "What color are the drugs? Tell me." And he's gonna be like, "Oh, geez. Okay, well, it's white. What's white? It's fluffy. Like he doesn't have time for that. He's got to get off the boat."
I don't have any perspective on if he was actually a drug mule or not. But one thing that did strike me as strange is they didn't make it clear if he didn't get off at Puerto Vallarta to break up with his fiance. It was like he was just getting off like a stop on the subway. I was like, he's treating this cruise like the subway of the sea.
Yeah.
Where he's just getting off at this stop and not getting back on. Like, why is that how you're getting to Puerto Vallarta? That's
or why wouldn't he say that first when he sees her again to be like, oh, you know, how are you? Oh, I'm engaged. Like, he's kind of being a scumbag because he's playing. Well, let me
Nobody
see how
seems
this works
to really
out.
Broadcast their marriages on
Wait,
this boat.
You know what? That's extremely cynical, Mike Taylor. I think he didn't say anything about his fiance because he loved that girl when they were kids. He loved her. And then they lost track. And then he got his eyes fixed by some Mexican cat doctor. And when he saw her again, that love was rekindled immediately. Not that he was a, quote, human suitcase for a drug cartel like you think. I think it was just love. Plain and simple, baby.
I think I agree with Dan.
Yeah.
Thank you, Michael.
Yeah. You know, tomato, tomato.
Tomato, tomato. So now we enter the dining room, and we are in the dining room for a while.
You notice.
And not in a fun way. Go ahead. Captain's table.
Head of the table. The captain was sitting at the head of the table.
So he's back.
Remember, because Stubby sat at the head and he sat in that middle part when he was carving the turkey or carving the Christmas thing. But I noticed he moved back to the head of the table. I just want to make mention because that was sort of a big thing.
So everything's bright with the world again.
Did make sense.
So there's a lot of moving parts here, but the upshot is the gopher is eyeing up Taffy and Julie's kind of giving him some confidence that this is Michelle. This is what he says, you know, Doc doesn't have a patent on charm. And so he's going to kind of go make a run at Taffy, which goes not great because Doc gets in there. But then eventually Doc gets booted because he's not integral to the heist.
Is
Doc doesn't have a
is
patent on charm, but he. Oh, go ahead.
Wait, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, I just am I asking saying, the question of like, is Doc charming? I just haven't seen that.
It was not shown in this episode.
Okay.
It's easy to like think because when we first started watching it, like the assumption was he's a creeper. He is, but he's so smooth that it like somehow it's okay that he's creepy. I don't know. It's like an acceptable amount of creepy because he's so charm. He, what was it, the episode? I can't, have you seen my glasses? And he said, like, I'm the one that needs sunglasses. You're dazzling. Yeah. I mean, come on.
I do think he's got a lot of like Midwest mom level charm though. And Taffy is from the real world and his crap doesn't fly. Mm-hmm. So I think that is possible.
Can I read my note? Doc doesn't have a patent on charm, but he definitely has a patent on roofies. Like, he invented. I thought it was funny. I laughed.
It was really the delivery that made that.
Yeah. Yeah, I had to read it because I didn't remember writing it. And Michelle said the patent thing. I was like, oh, yeah, there it is right there. Yeah, he has a patent on roofies. This little chestnut.
So how does Harold Gould get the info out of Steubing that it's actually Gopher that is in charge of the vault? Is that like the easiest thing in the world? He's just like, oh, hey, who's in charge of your vault? Like,
he didn't have to go, he didn't really have to go the long way.
In charge of money?
They listen in. Don't they find out about it through the woman?
No, he finds out about Gopher being the guy they need to target when he's at dinner with Steubing.
Oh, I missed
that. So Dan, is that what you think? Here's a fun fact. Me and Mike have refused to look up what a purser does.
So, never going to do it.
So are you saying purser is in charge of money because of like a purse? Or are you thinking bursar?
Like I looked it up. It has nothing to do with money.
Temple Bursar office, right?
Can we get the formal definition? We've been looking for this for a bit of purser.
I have it right now if you'd like it.
Do we want to know it?
It's a purser is the person on the ship principally responsible. Can you want me to read it or no?
Yeah, go for it. Go for it. We're already in now. Go.
Yeah. Oh, I thought
it's too late now. Go ahead.
Purser is the person on a ship, principal. Okay, Jesus Christ. I'll just start it a third time. A purser is the person on a ship,
principal. We'll never know.
For the handling of money on board.
There it is.
That's the whole job?
Okay. There it is.
This I guess is it the does first make sense, I've though, seen him. With... No.
Well, have we seen him interact with the vault? He's got money, it's administration.
The vault, yes.
He's also in charge of information and supply.
He gave what's his name? Traveler's checks.
Mm.
Oh, that's right.
That other guy, right. Not Carl Malden.
So is a purser kind of like a quartermaster too? Kind of.
He is responsible. A quartermaster is like the army. Sort of.
Yeah, it's just the army version.
Because the purser is in charge of administration and supply as well as money. So he definitely a quartermaster role.
Mm-hmm.
The quartermaster is the guy you call. So, well, yeah. I mean, that's
like if you need something, right? Like say you need something. What, quartermaster?
If you shot out, he shot out nickels and dimes. Let's say your battalion needs 12 groups. Yeah. If your battalion needs boots, you call the quartermaster. So I guess if you need like, boots on board,
if you need flip flops,
if you need a terry cloth robe, a short set,
right?
Yeah, towels.
So Mike, you're probably right. Yeah, what we've assumed it. he's a concierge.
He's a concierge, yeah. Essentially,
he's a gopher.
I see what they did there.
Yeah,
it all makes sense.
When they put the diamond in the vault, right? Why was there no lock on that drawer? Why was there
no lock on the drawer?
Well, they didn't think they were gonna drill.
And everybody can look down and see you doing this shit. Everybody on the boat can look down from where Taffy was and see you taking this crap and putting it in, and it's not even locked.
I thought the same thing. No lock on the drawer. And the door, whoever in their props department did the actual safe door was horrible.
Oh, with the real spinning thing. Yeah, it was bad.
I thought it was going to open up with like dry ice.
So dumb. Like, if you're going to do that, like, put like three dials on it. If it's going to be like that, like make it more, make more of it.
What time was that? Like, the lobby was empty. Like,
oh, we figured it was after dinner, right? It was after dinner. Yeah. With they were going to go back to the room and take a nap. Remember that whole deal? So I bet you it was like 11 o'clock at night. Probably people are either at dinner or at the disco.
Okay. So at this point, we're just going to jump around a little bit. So
they
know it's a fake diamond.
Of course.
Why are they putting it in safekeeping? They don't know they're being pursued by a gang of the Caper. What was it? The Caper Crew? They didn't know they were being pursued by the henchmen.
Mm-hmm.
I know the answer is quite simply plot hole.
No, that's not an answer.
Okay, but we're not going to go with plot hole. I do think there could be something of like keeping up with the mystique of it. Like there was an expectation that the safe was going to be used for this diamond that was getting all of this attention, and it almost would have been weird maybe if they didn't take extra precautions for it. Like it almost makes it less obvious, you know.
You got to sell it at that point if you're gonna roll with that.
And they're constantly being used to being looked at, so maybe they always think someone's looking at them anyway. Let's go through with the whole rigmarole. Let's go through with the act. Did you notice he called the people at the bar extras? Because
that was funny.
Although we had to rewind it because he called them extras.
It's like, what did he say?
All the booze on the Love Boat is real. That's why. Like, he's completely shit faced.
I think I would be remiss if I didn't just kind of throw this out there. I know we're talking about this giant diamond, but the big thing for me, and I know this goes out of chronological order, but man, it really got me was the disguise, the Captain Steubing disguise. And I know we're just sort of jumping around. That whole thing was so completely ridiculous.
Yeah.
The laryngitis, like everything related to it was
it's a special episode. We don't need to go in order. So let's break down the Caper four parts. We're kind of there for the first part. So let's get into it. So after Gopher locks up the thing, Taffy starts to distract. They're going right into Plan A immediately. And Plan A requires them to, I guess they have a blueprint of the ship, right? So they know that, of course, the sauna is right above the vault, which makes total sense. So they're going to drill through the floor of the sauna.
That boat easily. They probably have them laying around.
We're going to drill through the floor of the sauna, stick some sort of camera, unhook the unlocked mailbox.
But don't measure anything to make sure. Right.
Steal the diamond, somehow get it back in, which probably would be harder, right? The actual putting the fake diamond back in was going to be really hard. They never got there. And then that would be it. How were they sealing the hole in the ceiling?
Nobody ever notices the hole.
And all the steam that would be coming down, because remember how hot it was? Because they broke
it.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, they broke it. Right.
So nothing's dripping. Yeah. There'd be water dripping.
Like the debris, like when they drill down, just imagine the debris pile that just would be sitting on the floor that would make you go, what's that?
Yeah.
Well, in Gopher's defense, in Gopher's defense, he was working that shift, so he wasn't going to be there to see it the next day in the morning. Also, right? You got to figure by the
sauna.
He's just not.
Wouldn't the sauna be on the first floor anyway? Like,
it is
like
weird to have it. Yeah.
You wouldn't have it above another room because it's a sauna.
If there's some sort of water damage, valuable items would be destroyed.
The potential for flooding in a sauna is higher than any other part of besides the actual pool and maybe the ocean. There's nothing more higher than the potential for flooding from a sauna that's above another room.
Poor planning for part A or plan A is now granted they broke the sauna, right? But the sauna is going to be hot. Wouldn't you have like sauna appropriate clothes for this part of the project. They're in there in tuxedos. That just seems I mean, Larry Storch damn near dies of heat stroke in there.
He stops working. So, he gets a little overheated. He's like, it's too hot.
And then when he starts taking his pants off, Harold Gould immediately in sympathy takes his pants off. Like he wasn't even hot.
Yeah. So
that's plan. I just don't that's understand. Plan A. That's plan A.
Yeah.
Destined for failure.
So any
why did the sauna not explode when they took it when he broke the lever? Why did the sauna not explode?
I don't think it would explode. It probably would have just been like or some sort of leak or something would have happened.
If you break a valve. Is there water? Is there sitting water in a sauna?
Well, some of them are just hot. You put like with the rocks, you know, and you put water on the rocks, that kind of thing.
Oh, and it depends. It's steam. Oh, right. Still, you know? I stand by it. So, but still, it shouldn't be above a
rock.
If you break a valve, there has to be some like repercussion, like manually.
True. Okay.
But yeah, so in addition, I agree with you though, Mike, on like the that they knew that was the plan. They knew they were going into a sauna and they chose the tuxedos, and they also decided to start the work wearing the tuxedos. Like they gave that the whole, why wouldn't you just immediately walk in? This is going to be a hot room. Right. Let's just take off a couple layers.
Well, it was right after. It's like, okay, we're going to dinner in these fancy tuxedos. Did they do it after they ate? Same night?
So yeah,
like, oh, I'm
because
full.
everybody was like, distracted.
What the? Yeah, yeah, but why not? Why not do it at like 3 o'clock in the morning?
Well, because in theory, maybe you would have made more noise,
right? Because everybody's done dinner. They're out to disco.
The one other thing that needs to be acknowledged on this part of Plan A is that the only thing that drill would have been really loud.
Oh my God!
And the
it would
only
have been loud.
Thing that it required, the only thing it took for Gopher not to hear it was his own moaning as he was getting massaged.
A rub down.
And then her little like humming as they were dancing. That was all that it took to obscure the noise.
Of, yeah, because like, all he could hear was
drill.
All he could hear was the sound metal. All he could hear was the sound of his own heartbeat in his ears. He was freaking out.
Yeah, loving it.
So that's plan A. It doesn't work. Probably for not the reasons you would expect. Like if they had the proper drill bit, they get away with it pretty quickly.
Or if Ox had brought the other bag, right? If he had the other bag, or had he not broken the sauna?
Yeah. But I would argue
very sophisticated outside of their clothing choice.
Yeah. Why was that
high tech? A camera and like a
how many bags
arm?
Can you bring on board the Love Boat? Because these 60. People change clothes every other scene. They have tuxedos. They have bags of drills.
Hat boxes.
They have whatever. Mm-hmm. Blind people, a contramon. I don't know. Whatever they use. Like there's just stuff everywhere constantly. They change every clothes. Like it's insane the amount of clothing changes there are. And I noticed them because I was in love with all the clothing in this episode. But like, how much can you literally bring upon the Love Boat? Like,
well,
you
think just about. Have it. I mean, you've got. You've got dinner wear, multiple nights of dinner.
Right.
So that's dress up. You've got, you know, some
there's
people don't want to wear
their
bathing suit. There's masquerade. There's makeup.
In the 70s, when you went on a cruise, did you bring 10 different changes of clothing?
Like
this is a weekend cruise, is it not? Like this
and
is
as
10 days.
Oh, it is?
10 days.
They've said 10-day cruises a lot. Now, they have been shorter ones, but they like reference when they're shorter.
And the other thing, and I'll ask as a follow up question, is did anyone think it was odd that everyone was staying in the same room?
I was going to ask that. So
like,
they all in one room? You think they were all in one room?
Never showed them in separate rooms.
You're right.
Because Larry was there with the head thing on the whole time. Ox was usually running some stupid errand. No, he was there.
I think if you understood cruise etiquette, you would understand that was just their hangout room. They all went back to their separate quarters at the end of the evening. But I mean, I just understand cruise etiquette more than you because of the Bahamas.
Who would you rather stay with? Who would you rather split a bunk with, Larry Storch or Ox?
Oh God, it had to be Ox, you know, because you know he's been in prison. You know what I mean?
Therefore, you'd want to bunk with him.
Oh yeah, yeah. Rough seas ahead. You know what I mean?
So, plan B Plan B is that Harold Gould, though they never mention it, is a master of disguise.
Yeah.
Why wasn't this plan A? If he's this good at this, why wasn't this plan
A? That's my question.
It's
why is that not plan A? Just do plan A. Just do plan B, B better. That's plan A. And then
you
win.
How can you be so good at the makeup and then so bad at a Captain Stubing voice? Just like, oh.
Well, forget the hat. They didn't wear a hat. Yeah. Me and Dan have hats. How do you not have a hat?
You can't. Well, that way you can tell the difference when the chase began.
He was prepared with the weird, like, knee-high socks and shorts look. And hey, not
those
the hat.
Those shorts are yanked way up, too.
Yeah.
You see,
yeah.
Captain Steuben got a little offended when
she said he was 240.
But she said he was 240.
Yeah. Jenny said he was too fat. Yeah.
He does have some
He's a chunky man. I mean, it is what it is, but he's a chunky for a cat.
He's got some meaty games on him, and those socks do not help. I'm just putting. I would never even notice his leg except for the socks. The tip of his genitals.
He was sitting down in a way where I would almost describe his thighs as being milky.
Did you write that down? Is that in your notes?
Totally.
I don't know what to do with that. Okay, so that basically plan B, he's got this master of disguise. They do the bit where Gavin McLeod does a voiceover, which is awful. Harold
doesn't even voiceover. Match. It doesn't even
Harold
match.
Harold does the voiceover of Gavin McLeod, and then Gavin McLeod does a laryngitis bit, but it's really good. Yeah, it's awful. It's so bad. Also,
this is the second time we've seen a Captain Stubing impression.
Yeah,
of his voice,
and it's bad.
Second time, and I'll tell you, Gopher did it spot on. If you remember correctly,
was in Nazi propaganda. When he was a U-boat captain in World War II.
No.
That was
a couple episodes ago. Just a couple episodes ago on the Love Boat.
I mean, Mike, you did think that he might have been part of the U-boats.
Oh, I do. I still think there's something. Fair. You know,
100%.
I think we're pronouncing his name wrong. His name is Stubing.
And his first name's Merrill. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So his dad's Phil Silvers, by the way, Dan.
Really?
Yeah.
You know who Phil Silvers is? You can call him Stubby.
The plan B basically hinges on Taffy is supposed to get Stubing out of there, and then Harold Gould as Stubing goes in with laryngitis, tells Gopher to open the thing. He's gonna, I don't know what, like beat Gopher to death and steal the diamond. Like,
is the idea here is it sort of like the unspoken thing is that she's to have sex with all of them? Is that like, because
no,
she's selling a certain thing?
You creep.
Yeah, no, distraction with like, acting like she's gonna.
Sex with all of them. Yeah,
and it's
the
like,
entire ship.
No. I'm not saying she did, but it's on. But that's what she led. She was driving. Look what she did to Gopher. Turned Gopher into,
and
like,
it worked. The only person she didn't do a good job on
back with her bare hands. What are you? Where are you from?
Stubing.
Ooh, here's the thing. Massage. Jeez, you're a prude, Mike Taylor.
Taffy did a good job with the other two, but she did a bad job with Stubing because Stubing comes back. Her job is to keep Stubing occupied, whatever that means, until the job is done. And she kept him away for like 30 seconds. That's why the whole plan blew up.
Mm-hmm.
So you blew your amazing plan B. Mm-hmm. Like, on they didn't get close at all.
He needs to hire the right people.
Yeah, he's got.
She was not up to the task, obviously.
Not for a captain.
No.
No. So this is like you said. I mean, he almost had it. He almost had it.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially not a captain with milky thighs.
Yeah, he's not getting his thighs milked by that woman. There's no chance in hell. He's been around.
Vitamin.
This and this results in our second time filler, because the actual attempt on plan B heist was a pretty big time filler, and then Gavin McLeod chasing Gavin McLeod around the boat for an hour and a half. It felt like
it went on forever. I was waiting for him to show in like fast motion, like a Benny Hill sort of chase.
It was, this is how they got to an hour and 40 minutes. But long story short,
do you think, because he's technically two characters?
Well, actually, they list Harold Gould in the IMDb. They list him as Captain Steubing.
Oh,
it was really him in that.
So they're wrong.
Yeah, they're just not even trying.
So don't trust IMDb is what I'm
saying. Yeah.
Or maybe they're crediting like his voice as, maybe there's some way that that's like
best,
some
bizarre. It was probably the best plan and the worst execution of the four.
Should have been plan A. Wasn't a bad plan, just not executed. Just not executed. Plan A was stupid. Plan B was not stupid.
No.
What's her name? Dropped the ball.
And plan C was the worst.
We'll get to that, but I don't want to skip. I'm kind of wondering if this is the quote, Dan, that we had talked about earlier for Jenny. So Steve and Jenny are out on the deck at night. Steve gives Ginny a smooch and says that he couldn't resist. Now I asked Michelle this and she didn't agree, but what is the etiquette on kissing a blind person unannounced?
It's the 70s. Do what you want. Yeah, it's fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I wouldn't say that, but I did feel that it was obviously consensual.
Is this after he put the cream on her back and like she was sort of
flirting. This is the last conversation they have before she finds out that he's engaged.
Yeah.
So yeah, they're all the way down there. Yes.
Or and a then, drug
mule. Okay. So now let's play match game here. Michelle, what quote are you thinking of?
I have a cabin full of nothing but privacy.
Yep, wow. That's what I got. Dan?
That's it.
Let me walk into my own walls.
That one too.
I love it. I've been trying to incorporate it. It's so hard. Like, you really have to understand the context.
And she like did it. You like Eve Arden's that thing. That's like, let me walk into my own walls.
Yeah. Yeah. She's off like a shaky martini. Like, oh. Yeah.
There was more from Steve. Did you any memorable quotes did you write down from our friend Steve?
No, I thought Steve was just like, he was like, I just couldn't believe that he was engaged and had been doing all the stuff he was doing.
Yeah.
Steve at one point says to her, she says, tell me, you know, the sun is setting. And he says, I see two sunsets.
Oh, he didn't say that. Tatooine.
Oh yeah. What? We're magically transported to the home of Luke Skywalker? What? It's usually warmer this time of year in Tatooine. Both suns at the same time? What if the Jawas and the Tusken Raiders? when he said I see two sunsets. You know, one in the sky and one on, and there was some ridiculous way he wove it to her. I'm like, oh god.
We also skipped the part where I thought Steve invented selfies because he was trying to show her how to take a picture. I thought they were going to spin that camera around.
That's what I thought.
Steve Hollis invented the selfie.
SH? No, it was just
instead he got a terrible picture of his chin. So, because there's no way that picture was lined up correctly. So
I mean, statistically speaking, just saying she's not going to take a great photo ever,
but like that's on him because he told her that
before. Was that her camera or his camera? Was his camera correct?
He's like,
why would she have a camera
to record moments, Dan? I don't know. There's no film in it, but you know,
he's like, hold the camera here and I'll stand in the right spot. Hey, and then he stands in the completely wrong
picture
spot.
Of your forefinger.
You really should push your cuticles back, sis.
So Jenny is, you know, crestfallen, obviously. Steve tries to woo her back with flowers that Julie drops off in a awful ADR scene, which is like just terrible ADR.
The sound was weird.
ADR is when you go back over and record the audio, because usually the background sound is wrong. And Mike, I think that means they were actually on a boat.
I was going to mention that. I did see several shots where normally, you know, you don't see moving water in the background of the pool. You saw it when they were swimming. They were doing the shortest swim laps ever. In the background, you could see water when they were on the deck. Like it wasn't so much a set. And even I think that's why they just, how are they going to do audio? You can't, you can, but you're not gonna be able to hear anything.
But that was, I noticed it a lot. Yeah, that was a lot.
Maybe that's why they had the laugh track on this one. Just to get
but does that mean it was a more expensive, does that make it a more expensive shoot?
No, because they probably were like, for these special two-parters, right?
Yeah.
Like, you just rent a boat. They probably do all that in a day. Like, all the outdoor, because they still had the regular indoor sets and stuff.
Well, and plus you have the pan shots, you know, the arrival, the departure, you know, those standard.
Yeah, there weren't that many things we hadn't seen before, except for the outdoor thing.
Just those outdoor. Yeah, they're probably one afternoon. Yeah.
When you're talking about these roses, though, is that after the door scene? I think the roses as an apology comes after the cheap trick.
No. We're not there yet. Okay. So this is after she finds out that Steve's engaged, and that's right.
She
deuces out. I know what you're saying, Charles, but we're not there yet. So this is when Jenny leaves the rose on the deck chair.
Oh yeah.
And Fernando Lamas just shows up and just
takes it.
Off a blind woman.
Steals it off a blind girl. Who he then lets walk down the ship by herself. Like, he even turns around to look at her, and she's just sort of walking off by himself. He's like, oh, that's the blind girl. I know her from and doesn't say it. He's like, oh, go ahead, blind girl. Walk down. Open seas.
Well, no,
Mike tailored her to get that rose.
Yeah.
There's a deleted scene when he's like, I don't think blind people can smell. And then he takes the rose. So he's sort of like validating him taking it. I don't know. So he
steals that rose, goes back, and then jumps in what Michelle pointed out to be a very small bathroom.
That was a very small bathroom.
Celebrities.
Which also, okay, so this needs to be said. The only other episode that I sat through and like watched in its entirety of The Love Boat was the one with the runaway that ends up with that couple and like wanting to be adopted or whatever. So The Love Boat
James Bond Jr.?
Yes.
Yes. The Love Boat is a place that is a destination or vacation that a runaway can scrounge up some money for, or the Hollywood elite.
Yeah.
May also choose, like, who in their circles are like, you gotta do, get on the Love Boat. And so then I'm thinking, okay, Michelle, whatever, suspend the disbelief. I bet they have an amazing room. Like, their room and accommodations are gonna be. Nope. Next level. And then you just see her in this shitty bathtub.
Same crappy room.
Small crappy room
But that wasn't even the same room.
The episode with the runaway, did he run away because he was being abused?
No.
His parents just were getting
another episode. There's another runaway episode then. But God, sorry.
But who is the marketing executive? Remember the room that they took those?
That wasn't the
same room these celebrities had.
No,
wasn't that supposed to be the nicest room?
They didn't get the promenade suite.
Why not? She got a diamond this big, and she doesn't even get the big diamond.
And you are just in like spirit, slumming it. Basically, it doesn't even matter.
You know what?
Yeah, we've all had better bathrooms in our houses.
Yeah, like a floating hostel.
When she overheard the couple talking about he was going to buy her all this and buy her all that, and she was like, oh, Steve, don't buy me anything. And he's like, yeah, don't worry about it on my salary. Like, you're right. Anybody can get on that damn boat. Why aren't they there? Steve's broke as shit, and he's just getting on it all. He's not even buying a return ticket. He bought the return ticket on the ship. There has to be some sort of surcharge for that. No. Everybody, come on. Yeah.
He stole those roses.
Yeah, I was going to say, where'd he get the rose money from?
The real question.
Maybe that's what he's smuggling as the human suitcase.
Roses. He just yanked them out and put them in a room. Here, I know they smell a little. Well, she'd know.
Hey, Steve, blind. These roses sniffer. Smell like shit.
These roses don't smell like roses. They smell like a cashew sort of thing. Steve, and he's
plan
crap roses.
Plan C is the air ducts. This isn't even a plan. This isn't even a plan.
How is Ox that big? That's the stupidest thing.
Why would she do the air duct? You're going to do the whole dumb air duct thing, which even by 1978 had been beaten to death. Don't do it with a guy who can literally just stand up in the room. Like he comes out of the vent. He's like 7'2", and they have him swinging back and forth between the walls. He could have literally just stood up and hit the ceiling. Like,
why did they not drop Harold Gould down from the ceiling with the really strong guy holding him?
Or Storch.
He's slamming back and forth. And the, you know, because metal vents probably wouldn't, you know, radiate sound at all. No one's going to hear the all over.
The sound
is... I thought it was interesting when they come in, when Fernando Llamas comes in with the rose to get into the tub, right? The door is shut and he says to Michelle Lee, I'm coming in, and he gives her the rose and everything. And then he shuts the bathroom door behind him. The only reason he shut the bathroom door behind him is so they could plausibly not have seen Ox swinging around. If you're in a hotel room by yourself and your wife is in the tub and you're going to jump in, you're probably not worrying about shutting the door.
Oh, no. Au contraire. No, I'm shutting that
pardon
door.
Pardon me.
Yeah. No, I'm shutting that door. I'm probably locking that door. I'm just, that's just that. Yeah, absolutely.
Because of your fear of getting your jewels
stolen? No, but like, listen, I would be defenseless in there. Naked in a tub? What if a ruffian breaks in? What am I to do? It's not like I'm like
someone's breaking in your hotel room. Someone's breaking in your hotel room, breaking into your bathroom, and attacking you. That's what you're afraid of?
Well, I'm only betting they can do one of those things, and that's breaking into the hotel room. That's secondary layer of security. I got it.
Too much.
Yeah, and plus I'll bring my wallet in the bathroom too. Catch me sleeping.
Yeah, we all do that. That's fine.
Fool me twice.
That's why everybody called you Fernando Llamas.
That's right. That's right. No, in all honesty, it does make sense to me. I honestly would shut the door, lock the door.
Okay.
In the bathroom,
you're not at home or something. You're in a boat where nobody locks their doors.
Well, I would lock the front door. I agree with that. I just, if in the heat of passion, if a person is in the tub inviting me into the tub,
yeah,
I'm not taking the time to, you know, secure the door. So.
Listen, if it's that heated, I'm definitely locking the door. I'm just saying.
Know what that means.
The end of plan C, eventually Ox gets dropped through the ceiling. He grabs what we assume is the wrong diamond.
Thank you for saying it that way. He might have been right. I believe. I want to get a t-shirt that says Ox was right.
Go ahead.
It's in our store. It's in our show store.
Yeah, show us.
Next to the terry cloth robe.
That's right.
But yeah, ultimately, Harold Gould comes back with the diamond. He is high on his horse. He's got a whole speech about rubies are this and blah, blah, blah. But diamonds, you could cut. And what was his plan? He was going to just say, hey, I stole the diamond. And I
he was going to sign his name. Sign this name. Okay, Mr. Jewel Thief. He's holding this piece of glass, like, and it's this big. And he's like, it's 100% legitimate. There's no weird thing. He's looking. Yeah. There's nothing.
So ultimately, they either, you know, in the moment of the show, they grab the wrong diamond.
Ox
now,
was right.
as we talked about, it turns out that the diamond itself was fake. And so I guess the result would have been the same either way. Hashtag Ox was right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Ox was right.
Why didn't Ox just grab both?
Because
that way they would know someone was stolen.
Yeah, they didn't want to like tip anybody off that it was missing.
Mm-hmm.
But the big signature he wrote on the glass in his hotel room saying, I, Howard Gould, have stolen your diamond. Ha ha ha. I'm going to retire now on a beach with my three Confederates. That wouldn't have tipped them off.
No.
Okay.
Huh. Yeah.
How long were they planning to? He was gonna cut that how many ways? The profits on that?
Four ways.
$1 million, like what?
No, it was 1.2 million. So it'd be 300 grand.
And they're gonna live forever. Must have been nice. Must have been nice.
$417 million.
That's romantic.
Plus, were they gonna like finish out the cruise? There were a couple days left, right? So they were just gonna be like real cool about it.
I'd get close to shore. I'd jump off with that diamond in my teeth. I promise you that, and be like, "Smell you later, compatriots."
That might tip the authorities off.
I'd be swimming right into, you know,
shark infestation,
wherever they're going. Yeah, I didn't think about that.
Sure. Yeah. The guy that has to shut his bathroom door when he's making love to his wife in a bathtub would then just jump off a boat into shark infested waters with a jewel, with a gem firmly clenched between his teeth. Okay. Yeah. No. I got you. I buy that.
Can't be him, officer.
not that guy. Not extra security, Mike. No way.
No argument. Yeah. I'm ready.
Speaking of getting busted, Kathy and Barbara have been best friends this whole trip. A lot of references to adultery and all that stuff. But for the most part, Dan Rowan has gotten away with it until Barbara decides to have a cigarette. And Kathy tries to find a lighter and throws a Polaroid of her with Dan Rowan out.
This is the second time a Polaroid. Second time a Polaroid has caused a backlash amongst the ship. The Bob Crane Polaroid, and then this one.
Yeah, were Polaroids new in 1978? Because you're right. This is twice now.
It's twice. Can we pause for a minute?
Yes.
Can we pause or keep rolling or whatever you guys got to do?
Yeah, give me 1 second. We can take a little break. Hold up.
I got a piss. Sorry, Michelle.
So Kathy gets caught basically by a Polaroid. As Mike said, we've now had two related plots in the last 3 weeks. But how did you think, Michelle, how did you think Barbara's reaction was, considering she literally went from, "Oh, I've made a new friend and my husband is wonderful. He's surprised me with his trip," to, "Oh, my new friend has been banging my husband and they're all liars." So
yeah. I feel like the distance between her initial reaction and them just being like, "It makes sense, it's cool, we both have a role to play in this man's life," was horrible. Way too short. That was horrible. Even the way that she was like, "Oh," she first saw it and was like, "Oh, that's you. Like, look at this beautiful picture of my new friend." And then is that, oh God, like, it was horrible.
Polaroids aren't that big. You can probably catch both people when you take a glance at it.
But the layered realization, though, was very impactful for her to then just be like, you know, a scene later, "All right, bestie, let's go to the masquerade ball."
Yeah. That was disturbing. The ending was disturbing. It was all horrible to that poor wife.
Yeah.
I feel like that picture was planted.
No, I think she did it on purpose too.
Right. It was purposeful.
Yeah.
Kathy was the mystery.
Because she knew it was over with Dan Rowan and she wanted to just.
And she was trying to come clean with her new bestie. And plus, they're probably going to do more fabric deals down the line.
She wanted to get that right.
One can only assume.
That's the unspoken thing is this is, you know, this is a business transaction.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah. She did crazy things with her fabrics.
So Kathy, and we can kind of lump all the, well, we'll get to the masquerade bar, but Kathy basically tries to assure Barbara that, you know, it meant nothing to her and she, you know, Alan really loves Barbara and that she has a way to prove it.
Yeah. Can I interject real quick?
Back to the masquerade ball.
Can I say something? Do you remember why he was forced to cheat on his wife? Because his wife wanted a career.
Yeah,
that's why.
No, and that's going with him on all of his business.
Yeah, trips. let's get into this now, because this is where every episode that has some sort of adultery in it on the Love Boat.
It's the same thing.
It's the same thing. It's always about I'm too busy. I was too busy. It's on me. It's victim blaming by the victim much as anything.
Yeah,
it's weird.
It's horrible.
How do we get back to that?
we had a couple weeks ago, Zsa Zsa Gabor, not Zsa Zsa, the other one, Ava Gabor.
Ava was
too busy. She was very successful, and Leslie Nielsen was like, I'm not being heard. Let me go sex bomb somebody up in the rafters of the place you're giving a speech.
Mm-hmm.
And then they didn't deal with it. She was like, I'm sorry, I'm taking a vacation. Everything will be fine. No comeuppance. It's the exact same thing here. When the aforementioned marriage counselor, Richard Mulligan, found out that Loretta Swit was cheating on him with Robert Reed, her ex-husband,
yep.
He was like, don't tell me. Don't even say anything. That was his solution to it. So there's this weird, like, victimless crime thing to an adultery. Yeah.
They even took it to, because initially it started with the, that work trip in New York or wherever it was. And
that's
you didn't
right.
go to that. And okay, so now we're talking about time spent. But then I don't remember exactly how it was brought up or phrased, but then it basically gets to, like, were you pleasing him enough? Like, were you having sex with him? And, like, she had to acknowledge that kind of maybe not. And so it was like, oh, well, that was just another role that I was serving that he'd rather you serve. Like, what? Yeah. What? What? It made me so mad.
It is weird.
Michelle, as a woman, is that a friendship that will last?
I would hope not.
That's a great question.
Twisted. No, right?
Yeah, like they'll never speak again.
No, but the they are
boat, going. No, let me clarify this. In the Love Boat universe, and based on their logic, yes, I actually think it is a friendship.
There are no separations to the two logics. So I don't know what you're talking about.
I think in the real world, I cannot imagine that.
They had a previously unknown relationship prior to their meeting, and that. At least their professional relationship is going to flourish after the boat, after they're done. So they are going to run into each other. I mean, I think there's hope. I think
Keep hope alive. You
know, 1980s. 1980s was a decade of fabrics, if you remember.
I just feel like you get off the boat. You're in this hole. You're on a cruise. Like, the fashion is undeniable. You're just letting undeniable. Your cares go in the ocean breeze. But then you get back to reality. Mm. And at some point you think it's a good idea to grab dinner with your husband and his ex-mistress because you're all just friends. You're all palling around. And I feel like in the off the boat, I think at some point you would question.
Especially that's a third drink of the night problem. Like there's some truth that's going to come out at that point.
Off the boat, there's going to be a murder suicide. No question. Yeah.
I wonder if we'll ever will we have a death on the boat? We're talking like a murder suicide. I wonder if we'll ever have something that tragic on the boat.
Ooh.
Not murder suicide, but like.
I mean, just murder or death day. Or maybe not like murder, but death. Yeah.
Like an old. Away. Yeah.
Like you guys,
it happens on cruises. It's very common on cruises that
that's pretty
die.
Heavy. Wow.
So
the ice cream, we talked about that.
Yeah, I would say the odds of one in 250 episodes are probably pretty good. They're going to run out of ideas. I mean, they've gone to orphans like 30 times already. So
first season and Michelle Lee.
Before we get to the masquerade ball, Michelle, I know you wanted to hit on this. So the Steve Jenny thing. Steve, as we said earlier, ended up dumping his fiance in Puerto Vallarta, and he comes back to kind of confront Jenny with his love and say, I dumped my fiance, I'm here with you. And then Michelle, why don't you pick up the absolute garbage move that Steve does here? So
Jenny's just like, I don't care what you have to say. This whole thing was based on a lie. I don't want to have it. Get out of my room, which was her prerogative to do. And what does he do? He makes the motion of shutting the door. And then he stands there in silence and he waits like a predator to catch her reaction of tears.
What a scumbag.
That's the worst thing to do to a blind person.
That's terrible.
Pushing him off the boat would be the worst thing.
But it's up there. It's deceptive.
but they can swim.
It is seriously a sociopathic power move. Like you are saying, like I have the ability to manipulate and control this situation, and there's
and it's worse because he was blind, so he knows the other side.
What about the fact that you're three of you are missing? He was right. God, move on.
She called it a cheap trick.
The power of love.
And then
it is a cheap trick. That is a cheap trick.
She tries to do the same thing, but it's cute when she does it because she's a little blind mouse. He was correct. Fine.
No,
he ended up being correct because he buys her a million roses in the other place, Casa San Luca. And she goes to his room and basically they get together and they're going to get married. So it all worked out.
It's a revisit of Dan's favorite quote. What did the roses symbolize?
What did the roses symbolize?
Love is blind?
She said that roses mean he doesn't really care if I walk into walls.
You're right. Yeah.
They went to walk into walls like 50 times, by the way. They said that a lot.
It's a good metaphor, though. You know, that's what love is. You're walking in the walls constantly. You're trying to see yourself.
As a blind person, you more shoulder a wall. You don't walk flat into a wall like that.
But when you're in love and love is blind, you do walk head first, face first into walls. I'm not gonna walk into any walls.
Just saying. I'll say this about her. Like, even though I understand, like, aside from sight or lack of sight, whatever, right? She was as dumb as a box of rocks because then she tried to play the, oh, I'll see you later. And I'm like, no, dummy.
It was a joke. She was just poking fun.
She wasn't joking. She wasn't joking, Michelle. She doesn't understand.
She was joking. You back off my Jenny.
She had no facial expression. She can't act. She was like this the whole time, like,
We've already established how awful you are to blind people.
I didn't like her in this.
Does anyone have anything before we head to the masquerade ball that we have not touched on previous?
Did you leave the masquerade to the end because it was the weakest part of the episode?
Pretty much.
except for Isaac. Isaac had a great line, which you can see on my screen. My favorite part.
I don't know if you can see the
honky rabbit.
Yeah, that's the greatest line in this episode. And I think it was one of his like three lines.
Yeah, Isaac did not get a lot of run.
He had no room for him on this show. The following episode, Isaac Heavy, my friend.
And the previous episode was too. So maybe that's why. You know.
Yeah.
I thought it was sort of Julie Light as well.
It was really crew light. For the most part.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Chelsea.
The only two things that I wanted to give honorable mention to before we get past the timing of it is when Jenny, despite all of her wise statements and dramatic statements throughout the episode, uses the term uggo twice.
In a conversation.
Right. Okay. Which I thought was hilarious.
I guess we stole it from her.
I thought I invented that term.
Yeah.
So nope, dates back to Jenny, a real uggo. And the other thing, we haven't talked about the Hollywood couple very much, but can we please address the fight scene when she's like, this is fighting, and she rips his shirt.
That was messed up.
Walks away.
Thank God there's two fabric designers on board that could fix that immediately.
Or thank God for his consistent tan. His shoulders were chestnut.
It was pretty funny that he was pushing for her to read the script, and then it turned out that it was his entire thing. He was going to be the lead. He wrote it. He's going to direct it. That was pretty funny.
Yeah, it was just such.
But there wasn't a lot there. It was just Michelle Lee was awesome, and Fernando Llamas sounds amazing. And I did like the scene when him and Dan Rome were at the bar. With those eye openers.
Drinking eye openers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just although, give it Fernando Lamas did the thing that we always talk about in shows where he ordered this drink. Isaac makes it for him, puts it down, and he never drinks it. He just leaves immediately. Yeah. So, but,
well, he did his little dialogue, and he moved on.
Now, let's go to the masquerade. Oof. So the first rule of a masquerade ball is masks.
No one has a mask.
Rule one.
No one has a mask on.
I was so mad about it.
Yeah.
It should have been a makeup ball or makeup parade ball.
Not a mask to be seen.
Mike, we assume because everyone had elaborate costumes that this was known before they set sail, that this is a masquerade ball.
Another thing to pack.
That makes it worse. If it was like, oh, and here's the activity agenda of this cruise, masquerade ball, and nobody brought a mask or anything that you would think of when you think of a masquerade ball, everyone just approached it like a Halloween party.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, masquerade ball is just a fancy Halloween party, right?
Halloween party. Like Halloween in January.
Ooh.
Pretty disappointing.
I don't know why you wouldn't pack like I used to pack for Halloween things, right? You just get like a priest collar, you stick in your pocket when you're done. That's it. Like these people are bringing out big old costumes.
But not a mask. Because again, I was reminded, because I know in the start of the episode, like one of the titles was Masquerade, but I kind of forgot about it. So when they re-announced the Masquerade, I was like, oh, that's totally how these two ladies are going to come together I just saw it because they're going to be masked and whatever, except then they get to the masquerade ball and you see everybody's faces.
So let's talk about the two ladies plan. So there's three things that happen at the masquerade ball. Really? They all kind of wrap up the plots, but the one we've been talking about is, so Kathy and Barbara, are going to basically scheme to get Alan to admit or whatever to Barbara how he really feels, because I guess Barbara wasn't going to believe Kathy's word for it. So they're walking down the hallway initially, and Alan is dressed as Blue Dracula. Was that a thing?
It made no sense. With his fangs were terrible. No.
let me also paint my face blue. Like, was the collar too tight? Sense. That was weird.
I don't know what that was.
And Barbara's dressed as Marie Antoinette. You know?
He's like frozen Dracula.
It could have been like grease paint from the 70s that didn't transfer to the digital age too well. So we're looking at it as blue.
Why would you even wear makeup?
You look like that woman who ate all that metal.
He's ghoulish. Dracula is. Fair enough. He has a pallor about him.
My Dracula doesn't have gray skin. My Dracula has pale white skin. That's what to me Dracula looks like. Like that's what like goth kids look like, right? That's kind of what I think Dracula looks like. You don't see goth kids with.
I'm questioning everything now.
So, Barbara's dressed as Marie Antoinette. She does the move where she's like, "Oh, I forgot my purse," and has to run back. And that's when they're going to do the switcheroo. So Kathy is dressed as basically a Marcel Marceau mime clown, tells Alan to go meet her. Yeah. So two questions here. A, she obviously packed the Marie Antoinette outfit,
an elaborate costume.
Maybe if she had packed a backup.
But she's in no way packed the clown outfit. And I'm guessing since Kathy was saying
designed the fabric.
So you think she made two clown outfits and the paint?
Yes. And the paint.
No, because they're never seen together. They're never seen wearing the clown outfit.
Yes, they are. Yes, they are.
No, I don't think they are.
Yes, they are. When Alan first gets to the bar and he meets, it is Kathy. He's like, "Oh, hi, Kathy." And then she runs away and they do a switch in the hallway and she's like, "Did it work?" And they're
I remember that.
The face paint for the clown was intricate too. It was white, black, and white.
Yeah.
That would have taken some time.
It was crazy.
It was intense.
But I still think they just designed the app. They probably had fabric swatches laying around their room.
They are fabric designers.
That actually does cover it. Yeah, I know. Plot hole filled with fabric. Yeah.
Box.
Long story short, Alan ends up telling Barbara all the things that he really feels, thinking he's telling Kathy. Barbara is then, you know, swayed by all his admission of guilt, and that's it. Everything's fine.
Oh, what a weird, what a weird, unflattering costume to be wearing. To so have you reveal that your cheating husband actually loves you, and you're just wearing this like dumpy clown suit.
Yeah.
Also, he kind of loves her. He doesn't really know who she is. He doesn't know how to talk to her. Like, he doesn't. Yeah. I mean, he says he loves her, but he's like, I don't even.
Yeah.
Know.
As a
married for, and I don't know how to talk to her.
As a couple who's been married for 7 years, it was weird to hear someone talk about how hard it is to know somebody when you've been married to them for 7 years. I mean, as we're watching. Yeah. I mean, I'm pretty sure I know my wife because she sat there and watched 2 hours of The Love Boat. So,
right. But you, because you're not spending all your free time banging your whore. That's why you know Michelle. You take the time to know Michelle because you're not out running around being terrible.
At least no blue Dracula over here.
Yeah.
But that basically they'll show up in the epilogue, but that basically puts a period on Masquerade, that storyline.
What about what about Isaac's terrible joke?
Masquerade, the storyline was the actual freeway. Not the Masquerade ball, sir. There's plenty left for that.
Oh, I apologize. Yeah. Sorry.
So the crew is all into it. Isaac is a bunny. Gopher is...
What is Gopher?
Wet. We had, his hair was all wet.
Some sort of like Lothario, I guess?
No, he was like what's his name? Valentino.
Okay, he was Valentino.
The notorious lover.
Why didn't he have like a pencil mustache? His hair was just wet.
Because he's fucking Gopher, dude. Like, he's not putting any money or time into this shit whatsoever, you know?
Doc is Prince Charming. Julie is Cleopatra. And Steubing is...
Looking good, by the way. Mm-hmm. Steubing was...
Homeless?
I don't know.
No, King. Ooh. He was a King Henry. Henry VIII.
Oh.
Was he?
That's Henry VIII, I am?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't
clear. He had the beard, and he was like, Your Highness, you don't have to call me that, blah, 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 or something like that. Or tonight, you have to call me Your Highness or something.
Well, whatever. Steubing comes over, everybody's talking, and Dan, this is when Isaac does this whole bit about the honky bunny. Because that's to Fernando Lamas, right? Fernando Lamas is like, if I had too many drinks, are you a giant bunny rabbit?
Yeah. Yeah. He goes, no, I'm a gigantic bunny. But then Gopher says something, and he says, you know what we call him? The honky rabbit. And I was like, what in the world? What? Yep. I don't know.
Isaac did a lot with a little this week. He actually was really good in everything he was in. They just didn't put him in anything.
They just don't give him a lot. But it's odd. I feel like I prefer Isaac in small doses. Because I wouldn't say that I love the... I think a little Isaac goes the long way because he's so effective. Like, he's so economic. His presence on screen is so economic. He does such a good job with that.
We can go two ways here. So, Plan D.
Oh, shoot.
It's a smash and grab.
Turn
the lights off at 11 o'clock. They're just going to grab the necklace.
Grab it. Because you're on a boat.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it. You pack the drills. You make the mask. You go through an air duct. And here you are. You're just going to punch this lady in the chest and grab her jewelry.
Well, you don't even need the
teenager at the gallery in 1980s.
You don't even need Taffy unless she's the one hitting the lights.
Right. So, they do hit the lights. They all go walk over together real non-conspicuously. They hit the lights. But at the same time, Steubing's like, wait a minute. I told everyone they need to guard people.
Yeah.
And so he goes over to kind of stand in front of them. The lights go out. Steubing yells something like, well, engineer, this is the captain, turn the light. Like, does he have a walkie talkie?
Something. There's something. Yeah, I can't
remember. That was weird, right?
He was trying to establish chain of command.
they couldn't figure out how to get the damn lights back.
But it's like an engineer, like sitting there, like, oh, better turn the lights on.
He's just,
yeah.
Oops, he's always.
What do I do? I have to wait for the captain. I'm sitting in the dark. Wait till the captain. Yep.
You're not Bill Shatner. You know, that was weird. Yeah. Anyway, they grabbed the wrong thing. They grabbed Steubing's costume medallion. Wah-wah.
I'm so planning. This group is inept.
Love the wah-wah. Yeah. They're great. They're like the wet bandits. They're great. The
gang who couldn't shoot straight. Yeah. So that was the last plan that we saw, Plan D. Thank God. But the big story here in the Masquerade Ball was Jenny and her wonderful ears. So Roz and Bill are talking about rich people stuff.
Oh God.
I'm gonna buy you this, I'm gonna buy you that. Money is great. Isn't money great?
Money rules.
Jenny's just kind of sitting there quietly and she's listening. And for a second, Daredevil. I'm like, I couldn't figure out where they were going. Cause like earlier she had walked in on the crooks. And I'm like, is Jenny like going to like Sherlock this whole thing or I, whatever.
Yeah.
Somebody's going to take Jenny out. What's going to
happen? Yeah. Turns out she's just like, you know what, Steve, let's not be gross rich people like those gross rich people.
Yeah.
She and said, I just heard the saddest thing in the world.
Yeah.
Promise me it's not going to be about money. And Steve's like, not on my fucking salary. Shit. Bitch.
I work at Wawa, Steve. I'm good. Yeah.
But if her hearing is that good, then how does she have zero awareness of how loud she's talking?
Well, but that's my question is how loud is this party? How loud is this party? Because Bill and Roz, who don't listen to anybody except themselves, can hear this to the point where they're just like.
Well, they're sitting right next to each other.
It's the next.
I mean, it was a bold assumption of Jenny to just assume that because she didn't hear this conversation anymore, that they must have like moved on, I guess, was the leap that she was taking. But they were sitting right next to each other.
Can we assume that there's no way that those two couples would be sitting together?
Well, that's the point about the economics of the boat, though.
Yeah, the melting pot. Bring me your tire, your board, your huddled masses.
Get out of here. It's the capitalism boat. I'm telling you what, if I'm a movie star and I'm sitting next to some poors, we need to separate this or something.
Well, maybe they were on their way to private seating. They heard what Jenny said and they said, you know what, let's be amongst the common people.
We're not
stars. It's empty. We should be amongst
the blind
and the sick.
When you have a giant diamond,
blue Dracula.
It doesn't add up.
But this is the magic of the Love Boat.
Right.
Yeah. It's, I don't know.
General admission seating. The magic of the Love Boat.
Yeah.
Communal dining.
What is this? Dutch Wonderland? Am I right? All right.
So Roz goes over to Gopher and Doc and asks, who's that girl at the table? And for a second, I was like, have her killed.
Bring me her Doc head.
Basically is like, she's a great girl. Shame she's blind. And that was the end of it. And then that set up Michelle Lee for one of like five at the end where it's like, well, it turns out she can see better than all of us. And it's just a lot of that.
And then she's gonna donate money to the blind or some shit.
Right.
Right.
So ultimately the Roz and Bill go out and they throw they have the conversation. They're like, they're shook by the realness of what just happened to them. And they're like, material things don't matter. I want to throw this thing off the deck. And they throw the $1.2 million diamonds into the water right in front of the Caper crew, much to their dismay.
So they knew all along that the Caper crew was onto them.
You think
the Caper crew was trying to steal from them?
That was going to be my question. I wondered if that was like a performance for them or if it was like symbolic for this point that they were trying to make about material possessions.
It could be.
Was fake. But it could go either way. I really
it could be a performance. I didn't consider that angle. Yeah. Because they would just perform.
I like the idea that they're taunting them, though.
Didn't matter.
Maybe the real one's still in the safe.
Well, no, it's in a bank.
No, the real one is in.
Oh, that's
their
right.
Bank.
I'm just saying. Maybe they're. That's what they said. We fooled everyone.
What was Gopher and Doc doing under that blanket together? Beating each other off. We all know it, right? In the back? Remember? Yes, they were.
Yeah, they were just waiting.
Because the woman made them all horny. They're Navy guys. They understand the touch of men in a long voyage, blah, blah, blah. They're under the blanket. You know what I mean? No, nobody. Well, you can take that out and post.
It's not that kind of. It's not that kind of show, sir. The next morning we have the epilogue. Barbara and Alan say goodbye to Kathy. Like we said, that's probably either the last time they all see each other or a weird threesome. I was actually, the second time I watched it, it is kind of sad though. Like they do like a lingering shot on Kathy, like behind them and then back to it. And it is like, she really ends up, I guess the caper crew ends up the most out of, you know, on down their luck, but it is kind of like, that sucks. She was just trying to have an affair and have a nice boat trip. And now she's like just bummed.
Well, that, I mean, that's on her though. She
isn't that occupational hazard. If you're going to behave in that manner, like then you have to accept the.
It's very rare people leave the Love Boat alone. That's right. All I'm saying.
Who cries for the homebreaker? The home wrecker. Mike Robertson cries. That's great.
I feel great about this.
I know. I am just learning about you guys to a degree that makes me wholly uncomfortable. So
the thieves are leaving. They're super bummed out because this did not go well. Shout out to Taffy, who says she'd rather be in Philadelphia. Isaac fills them in that Ox got picked up by his chauffeur. And was debating between one of his three awesome places to go. What?
Yeah. What? Yeah.
So
he's got a ranch.
Is Ox so dumb that he forgets he's rich and gets in these schemes, or he's just like, he's eccentric? What do we think the Ox move is?
He's just not dumb. He's just not so aware. I would say that.
I think the crushing thing about this whole caper crew is that Harold Gould was not a good leader. He picked a bad crew. He didn't order his plans correctly. He didn't know that one of his three henchmen is a billionaire. These are fundamental.
Perhaps not as smart as he thinks he is.
Yeah.
He should have effectively like delegated these roles. Just be your guy, be the guy on the ship. Hire like a Sergeant Carter type.
If
he could dress as the captain, he could go as the captain, kill Gopher in front of people, take the jewel,
just for sport, look what I've done.
Change and be like, oh my God, I saw the captain kill Gopher.
Now he gets to make a Gopher costume because he's going to take the remnants of Gopher.
Well, here's the thing. You don't have to be a great heist guy. You could be a master of disguise. That's what he's best at.
Yeah. But you don't need a whole crew, is what I'm saying. No. You could have just,
especially when you're a master of disguise.
I hope he comes back to character, because I'd love to see him like, oh, he's doing Gopher now. Oh, he's doing this person, just to see hijinks. Hashtag hijinks.
Wow. And then they wrap up. We've kind of alluded to it that Bill and Roz are now normal. Explains that the diamonds were fake to Steubing, and they're going to sell it to charity, and then they'll donate to charity. Yeah. And apparently they only know of one charity, which is the School for the Blind. And they look over longingly at Jenny and Steve, who have really reset a Hollywood couple's life. Here's the thing. Just give Jenny the money.
Yeah.
Directly.
Right.
Directly. Yeah.
Right. Like, and then let Jenny donate it.
She can get an operation that Steve got. You know,
yeah.
100% right there. Plus, they're going to have to pay off these drug lords that Steve stiffed.
He took all the cocaine out of his butt and put roses in. Yeah, they're going to be pissed.
Yeah, he took all that drug money and bought those flowers.
That's right.
Millions of dollars worth of drug money and bought. It's
a bittersweet journey. Bittersweet journey for Steve.
And that is it. King of the Mountain, Mike, I don't think we can fairly judge this as a regular episode.
No, I agree. I think this is I think maybe we should file this for, to kind of
two-parters
evaluate against category. Right TV yeah. movies, that sort of thing. It's not fair to. It's too much material to.
Would you have it as like a? Do you think of it like? Did you like it though? Is it like a top episode?
I thought it was really good. Now looking back, there were definitely some parts that they were padding out, but they kept those pretty isolated. But I thought it was really good. I do think it has an unfair advantage of having like 15 people in it.
I agree. I like the heist. I thought the heist moved. I thought it all moved. I thought it was fine. Yeah. There's always a storyline I'm really, and that was kind of the Steve. I could care less.
Really?
Like they always have some sappy sort of thing. And I don't know. And then all I could think about is like, is Desi Arnaz famous because he's famous, or is he famous because of whose parents are? Because his acting chops were not, he was not the actor.
I thought he got worse as it went on. Yeah, I thought he was good in the beginning, and then it just got slowly worse.
That two sunsets line, I was just like, even if it's a written line, the line itself wasn't good, but the delivery, I was just like, this guy's just not a good actor. I would expect more for somebody who's driving a storyline, especially the storyline with only two people. I feel like the bar is higher. Like, you better come correct, Desi Arnaz Jr.
Dan, what were your overall thoughts about the quality of the episode?
I liked it. It was okay. I enjoyed Desi and the blind girl. I did. Mm-hmm. I thought a majority, I mean, he did it. There were a few creepy moments, but I think a majority of it was cute. It was just two love-struck kids. The caper, I thought, went on way too long. The fact that we were on plan D after a while, it was just, to me, like, it was, they were trying to capture that old screwball Hollywood comedy routines. And I get it. Like, I've watched movies like that, but like, it just went on way too long. And it was like, after a while, you're like, Jesus Christ, man, just end it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I liked it. I liked the cute couple. I thought that was the highlight of the episode for me. The actors were, I don't know, it was kind of funny. They were oddly charming in a horrible way. Yeah. So, you know, I think the low point would have. And Masquerade is part of this. Masquerade would be.
So Masquerade is considered the threesome, basically, the affair couple.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Which is confusing.
Way they treated that wife, to me, is just unforgivable and horrid. And the fact that she left with her horrible husband at the end and everything was forgiven. I don't know. I think that's the worst. So I don't know. I guess I just love young love and hate treachery. So
yeah,
I think Masquerade's the bottom of the barrel for me.
Chelsea.
Man, I actually am like lockstep with you, Dan. I love love. And I also hate treachery, I guess. And then, yeah, the caper's just fine. Probably a little long, but fine in the middle. But in general, I didn't know what to expect from, like I said, I think I've sat through one normal length episode. I didn't know how it was going to feel watching the two-parter. I felt like it was an entertaining hour and a half or whatever it ended up being, by and large. I liked it.
I agree.
I think it was an hour and 40.
Yeah, 40. It was. But it moved. It moved. Yeah. Okay, we kind of hinted on some of this, but let's go with Captain of the Week. So this is basically your best performance or whatever it would be. Who is the best this week? Shelly, you want to go first?
I'm Team Jenny. She's my girl. I really liked her. I thought it was a good performance. I liked her character. I've said some of this already, but I was, first of all, she was like the only name I remembered, probably because she is blind and people were always addressing her by name. So I felt like I really knew who Jenny was. And I liked her perspective. And I think I said this earlier, but everybody up to the end kept trying to really treat her like a charity case, but she really wasn't looking to be treated like a charity case. She was there vibing on her own. And I liked Jenny a lot. And I thought that the performance in particular was really good. And for the storyline that she got, or the amount of time that she got, it was like a relatively fleshed out character. I don't know. There was some depth there. I liked it.
Wow.
Dan, Captain of the Week for you.
Controversially, because I hate him as a person, it's Rowan's character, just because of his wardrobe and when he couldn't find anyone to play ping pong with him. He said, I'm going to go off and play ping ping by myself. Throwaway line, indeed, but I loved it. And I just loved, I just loved that man's wardrobe. And he was a horrible, despicable character, blah, blah, blah. But like, man, that wardrobe was on point the entire episode. Yep. So,
Mike.
I say for me, it was Larry Storch. although he didn't have many lines, I enjoyed, he obviously took it seriously, and I appreciate that. So, yeah, Larry Storch. I felt like he was into it. I like that, you know, and I'm just a Larry Storch fan. So.
I also had Dan Rowan. As I said, I'm a very big fan, but since Dan did pick Dan Rowan, I'm going to go with Karen Valentine, who played Taffy. And that is mainly because I get the impression that it's very against type. And she played a good bimbo. And, you know, she was in a lot of this show. And, you know, that can be kind of a garbage role. So I'll go off board here and go with Taffy.
Okay.
Walk the Plank. So this is the worst of the week. Michael.
I was not a fan of Alan, man. I thought that just the lack of stepping up. I just thought, I don't know. Again, I just felt so bad for her, and I just kind of that just translated into just disdain for his character in general.
Dan, worth
can I piggyback?
Oh, good. Yeah.
I was only going to say, because I was also co-signing, that was also my decision, which, as I was hearing you all talk about, like, how this guy has a whole entity outside of this episode that maybe I would have gotten it for more. But Alan is also, to me, because he was just, his character wasn't worthy of it. Like, there was nothing worthy about that guy that warranted any of the attention or affections or whatever that he was getting. And didn't do it for me. He's out, walked the plank.
An absolute split. How about that? 2-2 for Dan Rowan. Dan, do you have a walk the plank that we haven't brought up?
It's oddly enough, it's Dan Rowan. Yeah, best and worst. I hope this is the first. I hope it's the first time.
It is. It absolutely is. Well, best, no, Ray Bolger. Worst. I think Ray Bolger got it from both of us. Yeah. So.
Yeah, he's just a horrible, horrible character, and I wish he died on en route. So it's en route to home. I wish he got the plague or something. Yeah, terrible what they did to that woman. It's unforgivable.
I'm gonna go, and I'm a huge Sting fan. I'm a huge Harold Gould fan. I'm a huge Caper fan. That ended up being a little disappointing. I wanted that to be a lot more. And like we all said, it was kind of a little too long and all that. So I'm gonna give it to the Caper crew. Although Larry Storch was actually really good, I was a little disappointed in the Caper crew overall. So that's my walk the plank.
Sounds good.
Plugs.
Plugs. You can find us on Instagram at Loveboat Project. We have a Facebook group, Loveboat Project. You can reach out to us at loveboatproject@gmail.com. And then a quick question for you, Mike. What do Dick Van Patten, Vicki Lawrence, and Scatman Crothers have in common?
Oh, I feel like Dan could answer that pretty well since he accidentally watched that episode.
It's episode 16, my friend. Oh, yeah. Episode 16.
I hope Mama makes an appearance.
Oh,
Dick Van Patten. He has the most painful comb over in the history of Hollywood. There's not enough hair on the side for him to even do it. You know, it hurts to look at, man.
Ooh. Well, if that doesn't get you to tune in next week, nothing will. So thanks, Michelle. Thanks, Dan. Thanks, Mike, as always, for joining us for episode 15. We'll see you next week with episode 16. Thanks, everybody, for watching.
Peace. Thanks.